It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in, whether that be live here at Joy 620, or you're listening to the podcast on your mower or in the shower or however you listen to podcasts. You can find that on investinghope.com. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, and wherever podcasts are found. Today, as sometimes we do, we have guests, and today I have a good friend, Mark Mellinger, who is the Marketing and Development Director of the National Embryo Donation Center. So today what we're going to do is, as you know, every week we like to talk about the pro-life issues that are facing our country, facing the world. And what I wanted to do today is talk about a wing of the pro-life movement that you may not be aware of, and that is embryo adoption, embryo donation. And so that's what we're going to do today, is we're going to kind of walk through that process, what that looks like. And many of you may not know that one of the biggest organizations, kind of the main hub for this work, is right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Man, it's always good to be with you. I love what Hope Resource Center does as well. And, man, we're just, we're fighting the same sorts of fights. And I almost hate to use that word,
right.
Fight. We're involved in the same sorts of mission, you know,
absolutely.
Pro-life.
Yeah, and in 2018, fighting the fight is an interesting thing.
I think
we have to, and I think is needed. And as we have the conversation, I don't think that many folks are even going to know when people hear pro-life. There's some things that come to mind. One of those things is, well, that's a political issue. We're not going to touch it. Or, you're talking about abortion or pro-life, pro-choice. You're talking about the abortion lobby. So some things that come up in mind when we hear pro-life. But the reality is, a part of what we do is also with the way technology has advanced, we have many families that are using IVF and they're unable to get pregnant. They find other ways to achieve pregnancy, and then you have embryos that are now being frozen, and in some cases even discarded.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do, what your organization does, is they freeze those, and then people can adopt those embryos. So if we as pro-lifers believe, as gospel people believe, mm-hmm. that life begins at conception, then these, and some of the numbers I've seen, between 600,000, a million mm-hmm. embryos across the country that are frozen. These are children. These are babies. These are human beings, image bearers of our God, that are just sitting there. And if someone doesn't adopt them, then they're discarded. And as Christian people, as pro-life people, this is at least something we need to have a conversation about.
It is, because you said it well. We believe that these are the tiniest human lives.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that life begins at conception, and I believe the scriptures, if they're not completely explicit on that, I sure think it's implicit
sure.
in there. You know, that it's made pretty clear that life does begin at conception. So this is what you have. I mean, you know, the embryo is the tiniest stage of human development. The sperm has fused with the egg, so a life has been conceived. And yeah, what often happens, Andrew, is, you know, in the process of IVF, you have couples who are just, when they go into the process, they have such tunnel vision when it comes to, all I want to do is have a baby. They've usually been through a very long road, and your heart goes out to them.
Sure.
Many of them have spent years hoping that they would have a child, and it just didn't happen. So they go to IVF, and often what they don't think about is how many embryos mm-hmm. are going to be created. They may only want 2, 3, 4 kids in their family, but many doctors who perform IVF will create way more embryos in the lab than are going to be needed, which I say in air quotes, because
sure.
I don't like that term, but it's the best that I can come up with right now. You know, so let's say, okay, the IVF is successful for this couple. Great. But, you know, they've got their two kids. They may have 10 frozen embryos mm-hmm. left over, and they never really thought on the front end of the process, what am I going to do with these 10 frozen embryos? This is why the National Embryo Donation Center exists, because what's going to happen for those couples most of the time is it's very hard for them to make a decision what to do, and so they'll leave their embryos in frozen preservation at their clinic, and that costs them, you know, hundreds to $1,000 a year. They have the option of discarding them, which is just really just a nice way of saying letting them die. Mm-hmm. They have the option of donating them to embryonic stem cell research, which is also, you know, letting a life go. Right. That's what happens in embryonic stem cell research. So we feel really the only life-affirming option, and we believe God-honoring option, is for them, if they're not going to use these embryos, is to donate them to some place so that other couples, usually who are having trouble having children of their own, can have a chance to carry their adopted kids. That's what we do at the National Embryo Donation Center. We take the embryos from anyone in the country, mm-hmm. free of charge, to the donors. So they don't have to pay us. They just have to get in touch with us. We take those embryos. We store them in our lab here in Knoxville. We have several thousand in the lab right now. And then people who want to become parents come to us and adopt those embryos and have their frozen embryo transfers right here in Knoxville. Then they go back home to California or Texas or Alabama or wherever they live. And we've had almost 800 kids born in about a decade and a half that way. So it's amazing work to be, you know, saving the tiniest of lives and yet helping build families for people who thought they sure. would probably never carry children.
You know, and the interesting thing, I can picture a lot of people listening to this right now and getting a little uncomfortable. Well, what does
sure.
this mean? This is something
sure.
I haven't heard about. And yeah, when you think about IVF, and we're not in this conversation taking a side one way or the other on IVF. If you've listened to the show and you've participated in that, then we pray that you sought out advice and counsel and prayed through that and the Lord brought you to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do have to look at is okay, well, when, let's say a family does IVF and they have their children and then they do have some frozen embryos. As pro-lifers, we can't just act like that's not happening. So as pro-lifers, we have to look at that and go, okay, so let's look at the landscape of our country. We have, you know, depending on who you talk to, we may have 100,000 foster kids that need forever homes, that need to be adopted across this country. We
right.
have more children than that are in foster care, but not necessarily looking for a forever home. They're going to go back to their family at some point. We have other children that need to be adopted for whatever reason. We have there's plenty of ways to get involved in the pro-life movement, but one area where that frankly doesn't get talked about enough, I think, is this area where we have people that can go and adopt an embryo, mm-hmm. and they can go through mm-hmm. the process, have it implanted, and sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's a miscarriage. Sometimes you mm-hmm. lose that child.
Sure,
but that is that process. Even in loss, is a I think a proper way to view this from a pro-life standpoint is that embryo had an opportunity. Versus
yeah.
just being discarded.
That's it. I mean, we're giving these embryos and you know, the National Embryo Donation Center exists as a response to this dilemma. I mean, mm-hmm. we are here because there are so many frozen embryos across the country. So what we're doing is we're giving them the best, highest chance to be born and to live full lifespans. And you're right, they don't always survive the thaw. They don't always survive the implantation. Sometimes, as with a normal pregnancy, mm-hmm. a woman will achieve pregnancy and then she loses the baby in a miscarriage. You know, God has made this birth process a delicate process. The process mm-hmm. of procreation is delicate. We create embryos all the time through normal procreation, normal
sure.
sexual activity that we don't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between these embryos and those embryos is that we know these embryos are here. So our question is, how are we going to honor God, because we believe these are his tiniest image bearers. And we believe getting them out of the freezer and getting them into good homes is the best way to do that. No, everyone will not survive, unfortunately. That's a reality. But boy, we believe it honors God a whole lot more to give them the best and fullest mm-hmm. chance than to donate them to research that gives them no chance, than to just thaw them and let them die, or to just let them sort of exist in a nebulous state where a couple can't make up a decision about what to do with their embryos. And we believe eventually those embryos will be destroyed too. So no, it's not a perfect process. Just like, as you know, Andrew, I mean, regular adoption is not a guaranteed or perfect process. You're going to get your heart broken sometimes if you take in foster kids, if you try to get to do domestic or international adoption. But is it a worthy cause? Yeah, it's a worthy cause.
And we've been tasked with, as Christians, to be engaged in this process. And the thing about loving our neighbor, and frankly, this is when someone adopts one of these embryos, that is the fullest form of loving your neighbor. These are mm-hmm. our neighbors and image bearers of our God. And so the difference between the reason that so many people are maybe not walk into this or step into this is because loving people and loving your neighbor is very, very difficult and very hard to do. And it's messy. Why? Because we're fallen creatures. We're fallen humanity that will fail and that will disappoint and that will frustrate and that will hurt. And so whether it's adopting an embryo or adopting through foster care or adopting just in a regular process through Bethany or Christian Services or another organization, mm-hmm. regardless of what that process looks like, it's going to be messy. And it's going to be messy because of sinful people stepping into it.
Yeah.
And so even if you look at IVF and it's completed some families and been a wonderful thing.
Sure.
But because sin entered the world in Genesis 3, it's made everything messy. This was not God's ideal plan from the beginning. And so everything is messy. Everything is harder. And what we have to do is at least be willing to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. And not when you hear embryo adoption or when you hear things like they need to be thawed out or we have, you know, possibly a million embryos across the country in freezers. When you hear those things, for some of us, we want to remove ourselves from that conversation because it's uncomfortable and something we don't really understand. What I would encourage you to do is seek out the information, and hopefully we can do that today in this 45 minutes or so, but seek out the information and understand it a little bit better, because whether we like it or not, these are lives, these are image bearers that have came to be, and now we have to look at it as the church and say, what are we to do with that information? What are we to do with that news? And that's why this organization opened. It's the same, really our mission at Hope Resource Center and the mission of NEDC is not much different. It's the The goal is to celebrate what God has given us, to celebrate life, to encourage folks to come alongside and do that same thing. It's just a little bit different in the way that mission finds its culmination. And in this, I would strongly encourage you to look up embryodonation.org and read some of the stories of these families that have, and we'll talk about when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple stories as well. And I'm just amazed that some of these embryos have been frozen for many, many, many years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and decades
in
some cases.
And there's success stories of even after that, life being brought forth and just beautiful, beautiful families finding completion because of this process. And we'll talk about that when we come back.
I need you to soften my heart, to break me apart. I need you to pierce through the dark and cleanse every part of me.
So some of you may not have realized today that you're going to be hearing a conversation about embryos and adoption. But as we look at the pro-life issue and we look at adoption, we constantly are talking about the need of adoption and what a picture that is of the gospel, of how God adopted us and sent Jesus and all of those things. And so when we look at embryo adoption, it's important not just because this great organization is right here at home in Knoxville, but also because there are image bearers that are in need of homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we look at that, Mark, what give me a story, something that can point to and kind of showcase how families have not just donated the embryos to y'all's organization, but then other families have come in and now they have had their family completed because of that.
Well, man, I think of a couple right here in East Tennessee, great young couple named Benjamin and Tina Gibson. And, he had cystic fibrosis, which often when you have that, it means you're infertile. You can't have children. Awesome Christian couple, very happily married, but they didn't know what their road to parenthood was going to look like. So, lo and behold, one of their dads sees a story on the news about the NEDC, our organization, and says, "Well, I know you've thought about adoption. I know Tina thought she'd probably never actually carry a child and be pregnant, but I saw this thing on TV about this organization that lets you do that. You can be pregnant with your adopted child." They didn't think a whole lot of it at first. They were just taking off on vacation. But, oddly enough, as they were setting out for vacation, the thought of embryo adoption, which was a new category to them, like it is to a lot of people, just sort of sat there in the back of each of their minds, simmering on the back burner, and they started talking about it. And by the end of the trip, they were both saying to each other, that embryo adoption thing that Dad was talking about actually sounds really interesting. So they looked us up. They went to embryodonation.org. They looked up the NEDC. Came to our lab and decided to enroll in our program, and now that couple they are parents to an almost 1-year-old girl named Emma Wren. What's fascinating about this story? A lot is fascinating about it, but what really stands out is Emma had been frozen for more than 24 and a half years. I mean, so this was.
I mean, think about that, folks.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's a year old, almost a year old now.
She's a year old now, right.
But she was frozen for 24 years.
Yeah, 24 and a half years she was frozen. So she was one of the earlier, I guess
you would say,
IVF embryos. And the freezing technology wasn't as good then as it is now. But I think it just shows God's strong heart for life. Mm-hmm. That somebody who was conceived in 1992, who only a year, I believe, after her own mother, and I know this is hard to follow a little bit, but okay, somebody who's conceived in 92 can be born in late 2017. And yes, her mother was only 26 when she gave birth. Her mom was born in 91.
That's insane.
Yeah,
she was 1 year old when her child was actually conceived.
That is
and then
correct.
She
carried that baby.
Yeah,
and
man,
you look at her. She's a beautiful, normal,
that's
healthy
what a
little
story.
Girl. Yeah.
What a story she's going to be able to tell.
It's mind blowing. People say they're like, that sounds like science fiction. It sounds weird. It does. I agree with that. But and again, this isn't anything that we have tried to bring about as the National Embryo Donation Center. It's what technology has brought about and what it's handed us, and it does lead to some really fascinating stories. If it's sci-fi and it's weird, it's sci-fi and weird in a good way, because it shows God's strong heart for life.
That and what we also are doing is we're looking at all this with a biblical worldview.
Yeah.
And so we say, okay, technology has reached a point where an embryo can be frozen for 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look at that and we go, that's science fiction. That's something we've seen out of the movies. But we also have to look at this through a biblical worldview. That is an image bearer of our God.
Amen.
And so
Amen.
That embryo, no matter how long it's been frozen, bears the image of our Creator. And we need to do what we can to see that this life has opportunity. And man, what a story to show that not only that this family was willing to do that and all the information that goes along with that, but that like you said, the Lord cares about life, cares deeply about life. And we have to engage in that process. And so if somebody's listening to this and they're saying, Well, maybe that's something we haven't really thought about, but maybe that's something there's a couple out there listening saying that maybe that's something we should do. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? So do they just go in blindly, or do they go in and you show them this is what the embryo, this is – is it anonymous? Is there information that comes along with that or not?
Yeah, there's a lot of information. I mean, well, first of all, you know, the process starts by just going to embryodonation.org. That's our website, embryodonation.org. You find out more about our organization. And there is at the bottom of a couple of the pages, there's an application to adopt embryos. So if you check us out and you think God may be leading you to this option to build your family, okay, you go in, you fill out the application to adopt embryos, and that sort of starts the clock on your process. You will come in and have an initial appointment with our medical team. We're right on Kingston Pike out in the Farragut area of Knoxville, so we're real easy to find. You know, and our doc, you'll meet our patient coordinator, you'll meet our embryologist, you may meet me. I do marketing and development. And you'll meet our medical director, who will do what they call a trial transfer. That's just to make sure that your body can handle a pregnancy. And then after that, you usually start the matching process. And Andrew, that's what you were asking about. You know, what am I going to know about my child? Well, you're going to get the complete genetic history of that child, or I should say the genetic history and makeup of the genetic parents who created that child. So you're not going into this process blindly. And by the way, I should mention that you can go open or anonymous. We're about half and half. Anonymous doesn't mean that you don't know anything about your baby. What anonymous means is you're not going to have a relationship with the genetic parents. Mm-hmm. In open adoptions, you'll have a relationship with the genetic parents, and that varies depending on how comfortable each – you know, what level of openness each couple desires. I mean, some it's one letter a year with a couple of pictures of the kids, you know, and they exchange information with each other. Some go on vacations together, and the genetic parents of the children almost become like aunts and uncles. So it just varies, but you are going to know, you know, the genetic markers.
As we look at that, I think what that does is that shows us that this is just, and what I love about what y'all are doing, it's very similar to if you're walking into Bethany Christian Adoption Services. Any adoption, they're going to do a home study. They're going to do these things, and it's a very similar process, even though you're adopting embryos. I think at times people look at this issue and go, oh, well, it's probably more flippant because it's involving an embryo and what they would say, quote unquote, not an actual person. Mm-hmm. And what we say is, no, that's an actual person. So it matters. So we need to go through these steps in this process. And when we come back, let's talk about some of the other things that go around the country where you might can go to fertility clinics and you may not get the information you just laid out. You may go into it more blindly, as opposed to the work that y'all are doing. We'll talk about that when we come back.
I let out the sails of my heart. Here I am, here you are. I let out the sails of my heart. Here I am, here you are.
So today we're talking about embryo adoption, and this is a pro-life issue that I'll just be completely honest. I didn't know much about. I've been staunchly involved in the pro-life cause for quite some time, and then Mark and I connected, and then my eyes were kind of open to, wow, there's a whole nother leg to this pro-life movement that I'm not even aware of or talking about or engaged in, and so that's where our friendship began because of that, and now we're able to. And I had somebody text me the other day and said, hey, there's some dude here named Mark, and he mentioned you, you know, is he okay? Like, that was kind of what they said. I was like, yes, they're good. It's just another wing of the pro-life movement you're not familiar with, but you need to be familiar with. Yes, all of those things, yes. And so, which is a good thing. That means that the word's getting out and people are starting to see, hey, maybe I need to be engaged in this process a little bit more. It's not just about I'm opposed to abortion. We're certainly opposed to abortion.
Yeah, right.
But we also need to be talking about things that we're for. And if we are claiming that life begins at conception, then we can't just erase from our mind the fact that there may be a million frozen embryos in our country and just act like that's not happening. Regardless of our feelings about how they ended up there, mm-hmm. whether you're pro-IVF or against IVF or somewhere in between, that doesn't matter at this point. What matters is, again, we're looking at this from a biblical worldview, and we have these embryos, and somebody needs to step up and do something. And so I know that when I say that, that can bring a sense of overwhelming anxiety to a lot of people of, well, Andrew, every single week you talk about we need to be fostering, we need to be adopting, we need to be partnering with Hope, we need to be partnering with all these organizations, and now you're throwing at me a million embryos across the country. We can't do everything. What I would say is, no, you can't do everything.
You can't, no.
But what we have to do is are you being an advocate for this or not? And so for many of you, this may be the first time you've even heard about it. So my hope is that people would at least – Get on their phone, get on the computer, and look it up, and be a little bit more understanding of the process, so that you can have that conversation when the family member comes in and says, "Hey, we're having trouble getting pregnant. We don't know our next step." You might could say, "Have you looked at embryo adoption? There's a place right here in Knoxville that could help you with that. Just look at it. Add that to your list. If you're looking to grow your family, and you have on the list foster care, and you have on the list adoption." Why not just add another column and say embryo adoption and look at all of your opportunities there to stand up and take your pro-life cause and your stance to actually to its fullest extent. And so that's what happens with embryo adoption. So across the country, there are places where maybe fertility clinics or other places where families go in and they're looking to adopt an embryo. And what they find out is all the information that you just laid out that y'all provide with. You get to know, you know, if it's an open adoption, you get to know all kinds of stuff about the families.
Right.
If it's a closed adoption, you may not get the name and their address, but you're going to have the characteristics,
yeah,
the DNA stuff, the genes, you know, all of those things that you may want to know. But in some cases around the country, and this is why I would point you to the place in Knoxville, because in some places around the country, you're not going to get anything. You're just going to be told it's an embryo, and good luck to you.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know why exactly fertility clinics, and not all do that way,
sure.
but there are some that do that. You know, that don't make that information available. It probably is I don't know. It's for reasons that I don't really understand. But what I can tell you is, when you go through the National Embryo Donation Center, that's not going to be the case. You will have access to the full genetic history and makeup of your child. And, you know, Andrew, that's why a lot of our embryo donors do like to go through us, is because we take great pains to make sure that these children are going to grow up in good, healthy homes. If you go through a fertility clinic, you may save a little bit of money, but you're going to know less about the history of your child. And, you know, the donors here really have a heart for making sure these kids are placed in good homes. They have to, because the people who adopt embryos through us go through a home study process. They have to get a state-approved home study that really mimics the traditional adoption process. That's how much we care. I mean, we require that for every family that adopts embryos. That's how much we care about whether these embryos are going to good homes. And you just don't – that's a model you don't see elsewhere in this industry.
And the reason that model is important is because what we see in that is the importance of life. We go through all that trouble when you're adopting a full-term born child, whether it be through foster care or just through the normal adoption process. We go through all of those hoops. Why? Because life is precious.
It's precious.
Well, see, if life is precious after the baby comes out of the womb, as pro-lifers, we must say that life is precious at the embryo stage as well. If it's one or the other, then I'll just be completely honest, your pro-lifeness isn't where it needs to be. And so we have to, as the only difference between that little baby that's frozen in an embryo state for 24 years and my 7-year-old is development and proximity. That's it.
That's right.
The little embryo already has DNA, all of those things put in place. The Lord has already created and that they bear the image of our God. And so what we have to do is like I said, at least recognize that fact. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that we would When I go to D.C. in January for the March for Life, and we have 500,000 people there showing up, my hope is that I can have a conversation with other pro-lifers about this, and they don't look at me like a deer in the headlights going, I have no idea what you're talking about. Because if we're going to claim to be pro-life and claim that life begins at conception and claim that all of that is based on a biblical view, not a political view, then let's read some stuff. Let's understand it a little bit better. Let's reach out to folks and really get a good grasp of what a robust pro-life ethic looks like. And like we were talking about off air, there has to be consistency there.
There does. There has to be consistency. And, you know, Andrew, I think that is the constant challenge of my job. You know, and one thing I like about Hope Resource Center, which you're doing such a good job leading, is that, you know, you show pro-life doesn't just mean pre-birth, although certainly that you guys stand for that, and that's awesome. But you're equipping these parents to be good, successful parents, so that the child that is born can actually live a fruitful, productive life. That's part of being pro-life too. And for me, you're right. When it comes to having a consistent pro-life ethic, I think it is right from conception to natural birth. You got to honor the dignity of life. And my challenge from the time I started this job, you know, over 3 years ago to however long I'm in it, I think my challenge is going to constantly be opening up people who are life-affirming and who are pro-adoption to this category of thinking. You're exactly right. I would love to go to the march in Washington, the March for Life, and we talk about embryo adoption, and it's not just a cottage industry or a silo. Or you might have a few people who are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I would love for it to get to the point where it's just something that we as the pro-life and pro-adoption communities and pro-family communities know about. We know it's there.
Well, and I think, too, if we can be honest, and surely we can, we're on a Christian station and we're Christians, right? So we can be honest and transparent. If we look at who really was the driving force of the pro-life movement back in 1973, it was the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Okay? That's right.
And so who just a few years ago was speaking about embryo adoption? The Pope. Now I'm the furthest thing from a Catholic. But what evangelicals have to understand is we have kind of turned, and now we're where we need to be when it comes to standing in opposition to abortion.
Yeah.
But one thing that we have to do is pick up this and say, okay, now we have to do this. We have to stand for life, stand with those that are looking to adopt embryos. And so what that means is, as the church, if you're a pastor listening to this, or if you're a layperson listening to this, and you go to a church, my hope is that when you have conversations about adoption and foster care, that included in that would be embryo adoption.
Yeah.
Because it is the full gamut. It is the full process of what adoption looks like. Now, some of you are listening to this and saying, that's not the way I'm going to adopt. I'm going to adopt one day, but it's not going to be by me carrying a child.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
Sure.
Well, what I'm saying is, for many of you, and maybe even most of you, you didn't even know this was an option.
Right.
And so some folks that have dealt with infertility, who have longed forever to carry a child, who have longed for an opportunity, or maybe it was like the story that you told earlier, and maybe it's the husband isn't able to, and this is an opportunity for a husband and wife to walk through pregnancy together.
Absolutely.
The good and the bad of pregnancy. And so as we do that, I would just encourage folks that are hearing this to add this to the list. That's all I'm saying.
Add
it to the list. Have a conversation. If you find your family talking about adoption, then be the one that says, have you thought about embryo adoption? Have you talked about that? This is what that looks like. And guess what? If you're in Knoxville, you have one of the best organizations that do it right here in your backyard. And so I'm encouraged, because I do believe that more people are going to start to see this. I've had conversations with the pastors that ask me about it. And frankly, some of those conversations go, I don't understand it. That's what the pastor tells me. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And so what we have to do is educate people on it. We can't blame their their ignorance of it on ignorance, because they may not know, not even know it's an actual thing. And so for us, we have to, as pro-lifers, and that's what we try to do on this show every single week, is bring up the issue of pro-life and what that looks like, a robust pro-life ethic from womb to tomb, what that means for us in the womb, also while they're living on this earth, all the way to the time they take their last breath. What does a pro-life ethic look like? And so this is one of those areas. And when we come back, what we'll do is we'll give you all the information, how you can learn more about this work, where you can go, how you can contact Mark, how you can reach out, have coffee with him so he can fill your head up with all this stuff that you need to hear and tell you more stories. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back.
I will send out an army to find you in the middle of the darkest night. It's true.
Okay, so we're finishing up the conversation today, and I hope it's been a productive and fruitful. And as we walked you through just another arm of the pro-life movement, I think throughout this conversation, I've called it a wing, an arm, and a leg. And so it's just another
we're
faction.
We're going to have a bucket of chicken very soon.
Of the pro-life movement. So as we look at this, it is important. And where, Mark, where can people learn more about the work that's going on? How can they get in touch with you?
Sure.
And maybe there's a family out there going, I think this is something we want to do. What's the first step they need to take?
Well, the very first thing I would say is go to the website, which is embryodonation.org. Again, that's embryodonation.org. That is the National Embryo Donation Center website. It's very easy to navigate. There's a panel on the left-hand side of the screen that, you know, can help you navigate. If you have questions about adoption, you have questions about donation, you want to hear personal stories, you want to support our work financially, you can do it right there. If you're interested in talking with me some more about it, like you said, I'm always happy to meet somebody for coffee. That's absolutely no problem. It's one of the joys of my job. So you can call us at 777-2013. My extension is 3. So again, it's 777-2013, extension 3. But my short bio and email address are also on the website as well, and under the About Us section. So it's embryodonation.org. Like you said, Andrew, you don't even have to adopt embryos to be a part of this. Nobody can do everything. But if you can become that resource who, when the couple that can't have children is wondering what to do and they've thought about adoption, or fostering, like you said, you can be the voice that says, hey, have you thought about this? Because it actually ends up being a good, affordable answer for a lot of people.
Right. And also, there's opportunities to partner financially. And I know that I try not to hit on this often on our show. But let's just face it, folks. We are working. There's kingdom work being done. And so whether I'm at Hope or Mark's at NEDC, regardless if we're there or not, there's partnership that needs to happen. There needs to be folks within the kingdom that are saying, I may not be able to adopt right now, but I can write a check. I can give a donation online. I can partner with them in other ways. And the reason why we talk about that isn't just because we want your money, but it's because God has placed us in this place for a purpose. And so if we can be generous with the funds that we have, then we're impacting the kingdom in so many ways. And so I would just encourage you to look into that. If you're listening to this and you don't give to any pro-life organization, I would encourage you to look at, there's a lot of them out there that I think are worthy of your time or worthy of your gifts. And so if that's Hope Resource Center, you can go to investinghope.com. If that's NEDC, you can go to embryodonation.org. If that's other adoption agencies or other organizations out there, just look and get involved some shape, form, or fashion. We got an envelope today in the mail. And it had $1 bill in it. Now, I don't know who sent it. They didn't put a name on it. They didn't put an address. And you're looking at that and saying, I don't know the story behind $1 being put in the mail. But somebody felt led enough to put a dollar in an envelope and send it to us. And so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
And so whatever the Lord provides in that, and what we have seen at Hope since 1997 is the Lord's provided. What y'all have seen with some changes in federal funds and different things is the Lord has provided over the years.
Yes.
When there was some curiosity if if there was going to be
resources
available. And what you've seen over the last 3 years is the Lord has provided and brought people to you and brought partners in. And that's things that we should be celebrating, because what that shows is Christians are stepping up and being a part of the work that's going on.
Amen. And, you know, it really is a chance to... I find whenever I give, whether it's to church, whether it's to a nonprofit, it is a chance for the sanctification process in me to develop a little bit more, because I'm reaching out sacrificially, which, I mean, honestly, that's the heart of the gospel, right? Is self-sacrifice. And it's not too big a sacrifice, but it's just great. It's like it's God saying, okay, are you going to trust me? And what would you do with that money anyway? This is your chance to make a real difference and to help save lives and build families and communicate the gospel. And that's why we're here. And I'm not just talking about NEDC. I am talking about, you know, giving to Hope Resource Center or any other nonprofit or church. I think it's a great chance to grow as a disciple and maybe go a little deeper in your walk with Christ.
Absolutely. So if you want to hear this show, maybe you're just now tuning in and you've missed all of it and you're thinking, man, those dudes sound good and we really need to hear more of those voices, then you can at the podcast, investinghope.com. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, all of the places where podcasts are found. And you can listen to it there. We are so grateful that you partner with us in this work at Hope Resource Center, NEDC. I know they're grateful. Mark is grateful. And hopefully you're going to walk away from this knowing another adoption option for your family, for your friends. And we hope and pray that the Lord would guide you in those. We'll talk to you next week.